It's the show Agent Orange / Adolf Twitler would love to shut down.
So here's the story, folks. I am the least black person that you've ever seen in your entire life. In fact, we did very well relative to racist people.
It's the no bullshit zone.
It's called fake news.
It's the Shaggy Jenkins Show.
I know who you are. Just wait.
On the Pacifica Radio Network.
It's the Shaggy Jenkins Show on the Pacifica Radio Network. And today, oh boy, do we have a lot to talk about, including how everybody is getting what's going on in our country almost completely wrong. We'll also reflect about how now is the time for media to come to arms and give a very, very good example of the last time something like this happened in government and what media's role was in all of that. Before we get to it, first off, some brief introductions are in line. Hey, welcome to my show. I'm Shaggy Jenkins. Critical thinker, problem solver, guy just left of normal and sane and always centered in common sense. And you can find me at my website, ShaggyJenkins.com, or wherever fine social media is served at Shaggy Live. Before we get into some of our big, big stories of the day, I would kind of like to start off with a little story about a teenager by the name of Kyle who survived the Parkland shooting massacre only to find himself kicked out of Harvard over his own racist remark. Well, here's the thing. Back when he was 16, he had, basically been fooling around, and these are his words, this is his story. He was messing around with a bunch of friends and decided that they wanted to see how extreme and how outrageous they could do or be. So he jumped on and made a little video with all kinds of racial, derogatory, nasty things. Now, Harvard had originally accepted him, but then sent him a letter back saying, you know what? No, we're going to just cancel all of this. Now, one of the things that a lot of people would say is like, okay, well, he did something bad and racist, and yeah, okay, I can kind of see the point in that. Other people would try to blame it on, well, he's a school shooting survivor, so there's probably trauma involved. But remember, this happened years before the tragedy. So when we talk about this student, the one thing that does come up is his own quote. And this is something that I want to bring up and talk a little bit about today. Before we get into the story of Trump and impeachment and all of that, this is the thing. Kyle basically said in his response that, look, if any institution should understand growth, it's Harvard, which is looked at as the pinnacle of higher education despite its checkered past. If Harvard is suggesting that growth isn't possible and that our past defines our future, then Harvard is an inherently racist institution, but I don't believe that. Now, this is the thing. I have never seen somebody fight racism fire with racist fire or racist accusational fire or accusational fire, I should say. But there you have it. Basically, because Harvard is racist, according to Kyle, then they shouldn't mind the fact that 2 years ago, he said some things that were a little bad. And when I say a little bad, I am very much candy coating what is truly something that nobody should really be a witness to. Now, the thing is that kids always want to shock and dismay, and there's something to be said about youthful excesses. But I'm going to say this from experience. As somebody that grew up in that whole southern region of the United States that seems to be right now a completely different country than the rest of the country, one of the things that you don't understand is when they talk about redemption and stuff like that, it's very much a central caveat or a column of Southern culture. The idea that you can do something stupid and live long enough to pay back the world for your stupidity is kind of paramount. But, like I said, having experience growing up in that environment, I'm going to say that when people make racist comments in jest and they later come off and try to say things of, oh, we were just trying to be extreme and things like that. Talk about punching babies. Punching babies is extreme and it's not racist. You want to talk about eating puppies? That's extreme. But once again, it's not racist. once a racist, and I hate being one of these people that has to admit and say this. Once a racist, kind of always a racist. So I know that there is the part of me that would like to believe in, like I said, one of the paramount things to Southern culture, which is redemption is possible with the passage of time, and of course, the acquisition of wisdom. I'm going to side with Harvard on this one. The reason why is because they have a very, very legitimate point when they're saying, hey, you did this to shock people before. What's going to happen if you want to shock people now? How will this escalate if that is already the bar you set for what you call extreme and shocking in jovial manner behavior? And the other thing, too, is I hate to say it, but I'm going to say something that doesn't get repeated on a lot of other programs, mainly because we all know this to be true, but nobody wants to say it out loud. Your things that you say in jest, your quote-unquote humor, can also be a reflection of the nastiness of your racism or bigotry. And if you think that just saying those things out loud is extreme, then that must mean that in your head, thinking them isn't that too big of a deal, because you had to have the thought to have the action. And somebody had to tell you along the way, right and wrong, why doing those things actually perpetrates a very negative and violent society for minorities in America. But because you wanted to be outrageous, you went that route. You thought that that's what would just give people a good old belly laugh. And that also means that your humor is bent towards a type of way where putting down others, or, you know, let's just call it for what it is, mentally oppressing others in your mind beneath the status of your own self, that's already a dangerous precedence to work with. Now, will Kyle ever redeem himself from his racist remarks in the past? Maybe. Maybe. But as somebody that comes from that region and gladly talks about it all the time, I'm just going to throw this out there and say that, no. I kind of agree with Harvard on this one, and I think they're right to say no to this young man. And for everybody that's like, oh, well, you know, give him a break. He's a kid. He'll grow out of it. He was a survivor of Parkland. I mean, that was a big ordeal, right, Shaggy? You guys talked about it weeks on your show. Still talk about it from time to time, by the way, but that's not important. You're probably saying that, well, he's young and he's made mistakes. Yeah. But I'm also going to say this. 2 years is not long enough to learn the depth of the mistake that he made. 2 years from the time that he did these activities to the time that he was caught doing those in the Harvard admission thing is not enough time for him to have valuable, life-changing experiences that makes him go on a deep, deep level, something at the core of his personality, this behavior is aberrant and wrong and must be stamped out, not only in myself, but in everywhere I see it. 2 years is not enough to gain an appreciation for how words have been used in this country to oppress others. And guess what? I didn't have to go to Harvard to learn that. It's something that we should all consider at the end of the day. If you're the type of person that says, well, you know, I can have my opinions around my own kind about other people, then maybe you're just a little racist. And maybe at the end of the day, if we're wanting society to be a good and loving, caring place for all of us, maybe you shouldn't be allowed to advance in life with those backwards, draconian, racist thoughts. It's just a little something that I thought I would throw out there, but it is kind of interesting how the story has basically become shooting survivor denied Harvard admittance, and not kid basically is a racist and doesn't live long enough to learn why that's bad. But yet we all digress, I suppose. Let's get into a story that a lot of people do not understand, and I know this because I have been watching all day yesterday and most of this morning polls talking about impeachment on different and various networks, not only local ones, but, you know, the big ones, CNN and all those. But this is kind of important. Over the weekend, HBO, the program Last Week Tonight, did a whole special about impeachment. And one of the first fun facts that they threw out there is that not a lot of people understand what impeachment is, how it works, and what exactly could you expect should we have to go into a impeachment inquiry with our current president. Now, of course, if you want to go online and, you know, I think they put up the entire program on their YouTube page, it would be something interesting for you to see just exactly how others explain impeachment. But for those that don't have the internet, those that don't have the time, you're maybe just driving in your car on your way to work or what have you right now, I'll go ahead and we'll talk a little bit about impeachment, its misconceptions, and here's the funny thing, where exactly it could go should we go into a process of impeachment, and what role guys like me are already playing in this whole crazy thing that we find ourselves in. That whole crazy thing is, of course, the Donald Trump president and administration, which has blatantly and flagrantly, time and time and time again, tried to show its willingness to overreach the privileges and powers of the executive branch of government. Mueller, in his report, actually detailed about 10 different times that he thought that the presidential branch, or the executive branch, had overstepped its reach towards something called obstruction of justice. Now, given the guidelines by the Department of Justice, that meant that Mueller couldn't out and out accuse the president of a crime or allege that he had some sort of active role in these, events that we call the 2016 presidential election. Now, even though the DOJ put on guidelines saying that he couldn't outright call the president an obstructor of justice, Mueller, in his report, did lay out these 10 different, let's call them sketchy instances of Donald Trump or sycophants or cabinet members around Donald Trump actively participating in a conspiracy to obstruct an investigation into wrongdoing. Now, a lot of people are like, yeah, we know the whole thing, Shaggy, so let's just impeach him right now. Well, what do you think that's going to do? Because according to a lot of polls, as of late, people think that if the House were to right now sign the Articles of Impeachment, which it would kind of start off as an impeachment inquiry, then an article, okay, that's to come. But if the House right now was to say, we wish to seek to impeach the president, half of the people in this country thinks that that would remove him from office. That is sad, considering that in my lifetime, we've already had a president impeached. It was Bill Clinton, and does anybody ever remember him being arrested and taken out of office the second they declared impeachment? No, because that don't happen, because impeachment is a trial, and it's just like how if me and you, normal citizens, were to have some sort of thing between us, and I said, well, I allege this from person B was, you know, assaulted on me by that, and we need some sort of grievance or justice brought to this situation. In other words, I would sue you, and that's how it would work. Something went wrong between us, and I want to know exactly how wrong it was, and basically get a little justice. I'm going to take you to court. That doesn't mean that the second that I allege that you do the crimes, that you are locked up in jail, taken out of your job, and everything like that. If it's a misdemeanor offense, if it's just something of a civil suit, yeah, it might not even be a cop that you see that summons you to jail. It could be something called a process server who is, and I'm not making this up, usually people just trying to pick up some money in their spare time by delivering papers. Legal papers, mind you, but it's not like a very big glorified job. Process servers aren't exactly cops, and they don't have any of the cop-like powers. They're literally there to say, I have identified this person, and here's their form. But when a process server does this, they will tell you they do not immediately hand them the paper, then pull out their own cuffs and arrest them on the spot for the crime. No, You've just been charged with something. And when it comes to right now with this president, the charges that could come forward would be for an obstruction of justice charge. Remember, Mueller laid out about 10 different cases of that in his report. Now, of course, he left it up for the House and the Senate to decide because, according to the Articles of the Constitution, that's kind of their job. But let's say that we get started in this whole rigmarole of impeachment with the House coming forward, Nancy Pelosi changing her mind, Nadler basically winning the day in their little butting of heads, and the impeachment process starts. What then? Well, basically a process server at that point. It's not like something that you arrest them and take them to jail immediately for. You basically serve them papers that say, hey, you know what? We think that you're guilty of stuff. Now, the things that you could be guilty of that could get you impeached has to do with, okay, impeachable offenses. Things like treason. That's one. There's also this thing called high crimes and misdemeanors. And a lot of people don't understand exactly what that means. And that's the one that we really want to focus on when it comes to how impeachment would work right now if we were to go forward with it. Okay, so the House would say, thanks to the Mueller report and its own judicial and oversight investigations into the White House, they have found evidence, enough evidence, to bring forward an inquiry or a question of, did the president break the law? Now, this inquiry would act much like a warrant would to me or you. It is an official document that basically says notice has been served that we suspect you of doing a crime. Now, this is where it gets confusing for a lot of Americans because they're like, oh, yeah, if the impeachment trial starts, of course, we'll have the best judges on it, the Supreme Court. No, the Supreme Court really doesn't come into the process of impeachment until the very devastating end, if it ever reaches there. Instead, what happens is between the two houses of the legislative branch, the House of Representatives and the Senate, they act as the justice system for the executive branch. The House would open up investigations, much like they're doing now, under a formal, what is called, impeachment inquiry proceeding. And what that is that they have decided that there is an impeachable offense, maybe including something called high crimes and misdemeanors. Once again, I'll explain those in just a sec. But high crimes and misdemeanors is an impeachable offense according to the Constitution. So they would say, okay, we have found this person alleged to have done these activities that break constitutional law, and therefore we serve an official inquiry as to did this happen and what should be done about it. Now, that doesn't mean that the House of Representatives issues the warrant and then does the trial. No. You see, the House of Representatives is kind of made up on a sliding scale of population and districts across the United States so that each state kind of ends up uneven. For example, Hawaii, we have about 2 representatives. A state like California has like 11. So it's not really an equal representation of the country and therefore isn't the most fair place for a inquiry of impeachment to become an impeachment trial or an impeachment hearing. Now, a lot of times when people call it an impeachment trial, they think, oh, there's the judges, there's the hammers, the gavels, and things like that. No, that's not there yet. Remember, courts and stuff don't come in until the devastatingly bad conclusion or unconclusion of an impeachment process. For the most part, after the House serves the article of impeachment or the inquiry where they say, we think that the president did this, it then shifts over to the one legislative body that is supposed to equally represent all of the states, with only allowing 2 representatives from each state. That, of course, would be the United States Senate. Now, a lot of people are saying, wait a minute, whoa. So the House is controlled by the Dems, but the Senate is controlled by these really Trump-friendly Republicans. Is that the real reason that Nancy Pelosi doesn't want this to go to an impeachment hearing? And the short answer could be yes. Democratic Party members could be right now banking on the whole assumption that coming up in 2020, there is going to be yet another blue rising tide, and they will be able to capture more houses in the Senate, making it more favorable for an impeachment hearing. As it stands right now, some 67 members of the current Senate would have to, through the course of a hearing, which they could subpoena their own members, they basically form an investigative unit within their judicial unit. So once the trial begins and they're starting to drill down on what happened, when this happened, and what, you're probably thinking, ah, ha, ha, that's when the cuffs and the guards come out. But remember Bill Clinton, he went through an impeachment and did not lose his job, was not ousted out of office, and wasn't arrested. And the same can be said for the other one. I think it was Jackson. He was the subject way back in the day. He also went through an impeachment and kept his job. So the assumption that America has that impeachment automatically leads to the president being ousted from office, I hate to break it to you, but I'm going to say it for probably, I think, the seventh time now. Impeachment doesn't work like that. So instead, when all the inquiries from the House have turned into the trial over on the Senate side, the Senate starts the hearing. And as such, they allow their members to have questions and things like that. They allow for subcommittees and recesses, and it's a huge, huge deal. But what the real big deal is what people think would happen should Donald Trump go to impeachment this year. And that would be that, thanks to a very favorable Senate and, let's just be honest, the president pro temp of the Senate and Mitch McConnell are very, very much into the Trump escalades, or acolytes, I should say. They pretty much will make sure that this thing gets stonewalled or not come to a full floor hearing. Now, the Constitution does say that once the articles have been released on the House side, the Senate side does indeed have to do an investigation and a hearing. It does not say or deem the scope and range or direction of said hearing. So one of the potential backlashes right now is if you go to an impeachment trial with a Mitch McConnell-led Senate, this is going to be a circus sideshow. They're going to do everything in their power to use the trial of impeachment against their guy in the White House to make it all about the Democrats and their paranoia, of their politicizing, of polarizing the American people, of wasting taxpayer monies and times. In other words, they would have a big main stage to kind of freely get out their pro-Trump, anti-Democrat platform. So some insiders say that's kind of where things are now with Pelosi. So she's kind of reading the temperature of the room and saying, let me wait until a little bit later when I know a couple of more seats are going to be in jeopardy and we're going to have a better, clearer vision of what's going to come of the landscape after the 2020 election. And then and only then will we push the actual impeachment inquiry. Now, if you think that nothing is being done towards that direction, though, despite everything that Democrats say, that it's false. Every single one of these investigations, and there's some 15 outside investigations, too, into Donald J. Trump, right now, all those investigations are actually doing a good job of building up an evidential foothold into the events of what may have transpired. Now, this foothold could lead to enough evidence and enough hearings to later be brought in front of the House for a hearing to enact the inquiry or the articles of impeachment or the formal charge. These charges would then be shipped over to the Senate, where the Senate would become a court. And should things kind of progress like insiders kind of looking at,
That would be a sideshow. Republicans would use that opportunity at every waking moment to grandstand, to shout down, to basically denounce anything that the Democrats have done, policy or otherwise, and really not focus anything about the impeachment. So you're probably thinking, oh, okay, I see how it is, Shaggy. So we can't do an impeachment now because of those things. No, I'm not saying that at all. I'm just saying that this is what people think is in the mind. Should we actually go through an impeachment inquiry? That's where a lot of people go to the next question that the surveys are asking. The first one is do you think impeachment would remove the president? Of course, half of Americans think it would. It wouldn't. It doesn't do anything to remove the president from power. Only a trial in the Senate can do that, and there's very specific conditions they can do. So if that's not the case, well, what about when it comes to impeachment, when you're dealing with a blockaded kind of house like we are, a house divided with the Senate being firmly with the GOP and the House being for the Dems, could impeachment actually be something that could foul up the whole works? Is now the right and practical time for impeachment? Believe it or not, when we get back from the break, I'm going to tell you a couple of reasons why you might want to consider it is, including a little bit of history of Watergate and where we were back then, where, well, right about now on the timeline. It's the Shaggy Jenkins Show.
Too much consumption of the Shaggy Jenkins Show could result in a higher IQ, a better understanding of the world, and not being called a f***ing idiot as much. It's the Shaggy Jenkins Show.
It's the Shaggy Jenkins Show on the Pacifica Radio Network. Welcome back to it. If you missed anything during the break, I'm so sorry. You can catch our show on a bunch of different platforms, including iHeartRadio and places like Spotify. Just look for the Shaggy Jenkins Show. Or go to my website, ShaggyJenkins.com, or wherever fine social media is served at Shaggy Live. Before we went to the break, I was talking about impeachment and is now the right time. I laid out the whole groundwork for it about the Senate being firmly in the back pocket of Trump and the House being just kind of the warrant process servers, not really the people that can do the trial. So is the logic in right now, Nancy Pelosi and everybody in the House keeping the investigations under the House? Well, kind of, especially if you consider that Joe Biden said that his strategy in dealing with Republicans is shame. It seems that Pelosi and House Democrats are going to, as much as possible, use the investigation to kind of push forward this vision that Donald Trump has not been exonerated by the Mueller report. That narrative is very important. The reason why is if you are a consumer of conservative media, first off, how did you escape and why are you listening to this show? Second, congratulations, you are now a full-fledged human being. Because conservative media has been downplaying the admissions of things that could be even remotely shady in the Mueller report towards Donald Trump, with Fox News and America or One American Network, OAN, both coming forward and saying, well, the Mueller report completely exonerated the president. It exonerated the president and he is exonerated. No, he is not. But that's what the news media on the conservative side has pushed forward. So for a lot of people in the United States, people that only get their news from that side of the aisle, they are kind of wondering, what the hell is going on here? Mueller's report came out. The president was exonerated. Why are we still talking about this thing? And if you are only observing news from that side of the political spectrum, it would be safe to say that that is your current view of this. What is the big deal?
Well, the big deal was is that the Mueller report, in fact, did not exonerate the president. It alleged 10 different times and 10 different activities that he engaged in knowingly and willingly as a participant that can be construed as obstruction of justice. And as such, because the Department of Justice guidelines on Mueller and the special prosecutor team, he cannot say, hey, look, we need to send this guy to impeachment. Instead, he can make a report and send that over to the House. The House can then look into it and start the whole process that we talked about at the beginning of the show. But the deadlock, that is what's got people really concerned. Hey, the House is in the hand of the Dem. But the Republicans in the Senate side, especially Mitch McConnell, have shown an almost arrogant adhesion to we're going to do whatever we want. We are drunk with power. And if any sort of impeachment is flouted our way, yeah, we got your impeachment right here, baby. Now, for people that think that that's kind of why things are actually deadlocked, it's only a real, real tiny, 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 almost minuscule, unimportant reason. In the multitude of reason, this has not been brought up as of yet. One thing is the timing. If we were to go into an impeachment inquiry as of now, there's not that much longer left in the current congressional session. So we would basically run out the clock with impeachment, take the break, and then have to come back to impeachment, or run the clock out of impeachment, extend the clock for impeachment, keep impeachment going 24 hours a day until finally Americans are so sick of the whole impeachment talk, they're ready to just say, let the guy go. Now, of course, there's a very, 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 very slim chance once the full light of details of Donald Trump's activities and his involvement in said activities comes out, there is a very good chance that that will not ever be the scenario. Time and time again, when people are told, oh my God, the president is not exonerated, in fact, he's guilty as hell, and we just couldn't say it in that environment, but the House can say it, and the Senate can say it, and us as private citizens, we can say it, he's guilty as hell. When you start putting that information in front of people, they do, in fact, kind of change their mind on whether we should impeach or should not impeach. Now, according to the latest polls, the country is split right down the middle to impeach immediately. And I thought I would bring up, okay, what would that actually do? It's not going to kick him out of office. We've already covered all of the reasons why. We've even given you past examples from our own United States history to say, nah, that's not how impeachment works. But if that's not going to happen, what would happen? What would be the kind of things that an impeachment would bring? Well, first off, let's talk about all the president's tirades on Twitter. Yeah, I know. He said a lot of things about a lot of stuff. And then last week, we also went on record of saying how low his engagement was becoming and how his whole Twitter claim to fame might actually be running people away from him and not to the ballot box in support of him. But in Donald Trump's Twitter tirades, he had came out and basically said, look, this impeachment thing is crazy. I did nothing wrong. If somebody comes up to you with information, wouldn't you want to know the information? I run the government. I run the country. The director of the FBI is wrong. I mean, with all of this stuff that he said, what would an impeachment inquiry actually do? Well, first, with that Twitter thing, it could actually be used as a way of stopping it or holding every single one of those tweets that the president has put up, even the ones that he put up and then later deleted, into a legal microscope as to whether or not they could have been used to harass, push aside, or otherwise kind of tamper with any witnesses in Mueller's special counsel investigation or the ongoing House investigation. That's one thing that would happen. The second thing that would happen is an impeachment inquiry would actually make things more formalized. Versus a bunch of stonewalling and deals and this deal and that deal between these departments and stuff like we're seeing. No, an impeachment is essentially a trial. And as such, a subpoena could be issued for certain things or certain testimony and actually have legal consequences should any party refuse to turn over said information or said witness. And that's something that we've noticed in the case of Don McGahn and the president saying, no, don't testify. He can do that now because it's just a, you know, exploratory thing. If it were actually under an impeachment hearing, that would become a prosecutable offense. Now, an inquiry into the president as far as a formal impeachment would also do something else. It would force the United States citizens, remember how we were talking about most of them don't know what's going on? It would force them to learn the contents of the Mueller report. And right now, not a lot of people understand it. It's over 400 pages long. I read it. I think I started drinking right midway through it because it was so depressingly long. But then I sobered up and I finished. A lot of Americans wouldn't have that sort of spiritual fortitude when it comes to something like a Mueller report. And just to be honest, they don't have time in their day to read this just off the cuff for their own understanding. I would really like that to be the case. I would really like for the economy and everything in this country to be so good right now that we have enough free time to read a government report about government machinations that affect the way that we do government here in this country. But that's not going to happen. People are working two and three jobs, sometimes with families and stuff that they have to raise full time. Sometimes they're single parents. So sitting down to read a 400-page report, I'm thinking that goes right below the list of try not to kill myself today. But an impeachment hearing would force the public disclosure of the allegations of the Mueller report. And as such, because a lot of Americans don't know what's in that report, they don't know the extent of the activities that Donald Trump took in that report, that information coming out could absolutely be the game changer for this country. Once everybody, not just one side of the political aisle, not just a niche of that side of the political aisle. Remember, if you're a Democrat and you're on the left, there's a lot of people that still think, let's impeach him and throw him in prison right now. And that's totally how they think that process works. And they're angry at Democrats for not pushing forward on this arrest him, throw the bum in jail right now kind of mentality. So on both sides of the political aisle, there is a huge misunderstanding of how impeachment works and what it would actually do. But the real tangible, intangible, by the way, means something physically touchable, you know, it's real, baby, it's real. The tangible benefits of an impeachment hearing right now is that no matter which side of the aisle you are on, you would be forced to listen to the trial disclose information from within the Mueller report. And the more of that information that got put forward, and the more of that information that gets absorbed by the American public, the better chances we have of making it out of this administration with a country intact. Because look, let's just be honest here. There is a good chance that if Donald Trump were to make two terms and then, you know, reach the peak of his term, there's a good chance that after 8 years, he would barricade himself in the White House and never want to leave. We might actually have to arrest a former president to get him out of the way of the new president. That's something that's very funny, but also let's not put it past him, okay? With that said, though, Donald Trump says the difference between him and another guy that was going through similar scrutiny, one Richard Milhouse Nixon, the thing is that Donald Trump don't quit. And that's exactly the point. Without him coming forward and basically admitting, this is the funny part, admitting to all of his wrongdoings in a speech and saying, I resign as the office of presidency. See you in Florida. I'm gone to Mar-a-Lago. Unless he was to do that, which let's go ahead and put this out there, Donald Trump's ego will not allow him to quit. He has said time and time again that the difference between him and Nixon is he doesn't quit. Because had Nixon not quit, we're not even sure Nixon would have been ousted for office from Watergate. And keep in mind, Watergate was so bad, it is now the catch catch-all word that we use for any political scandal. Watergate was so bad, it became its own noun. Not just the hotel, but you know what I mean. The entire process of Richard Nixon using his power and influence to spy on his political enemies? Yeah. Hitchcockian in nature? Sure. Twilight Zone? Maybe we took a little left when we should have taken a right, but the fact of the matter is that in the reality of how impeachments work, Richard Nixon quit. And a lot of people think because Nixon quit ahead of his impeachment hearing, that that's how impeachments work. You say the word impeachment, and that scares the president away like a boogeyman. Because when it comes to Donald Trump and the Richard Nixon comparisons, let's just go ahead and say there is something eerily similar about what's happening now. Without an inquiry, without an actual impeachment trial, and the full disclosure of Mueller's reports to the American public by and large, through this trial, right now, Donald Trump is in kind of enjoying a heavy popularity that he should not have given the weight of the stuff that he's done. High crimes and misdemeanors. That would be the thing that he would actually go to impeachment for. But you're thinking, okay, well, high crimes and misdemeanors. Is it treason? Is it bribery? Is it all in? High crimes and misdemeanors are any crimes that seem to circumvent the machinations of government or subvert the Constitution. And in this case, obstructing justice into an investigation about an election is definitely a high crime and misdemeanor. So it is an impeachable offense. But at the beginning of Richard Nixon's kind of impeachable offense, when Watergate was still just a couple of guys caught doing something they shouldn't have, and, well, we locked them up and all's well that ends well. Before it got to that level, keep in mind, Richard Nixon was highly popular. Watergate was a scandal to make sure that he didn't just win his midterm, that he would crush the presidential competition. As it turns out, he didn't need to help himself. He was so popular amongst voters at the time that Richard Nixon easily won the vote without any sort of strange conspiracy that he thought he needed to maintain power in office. Now, Watergate was brought forward, and a lot of people were like, oh, God, you know what? I don't see why they're just bothering this man. Tell me if this sounds familiar. I don't see why the Democrats are doing this. Oh, yeah, I do. They're sour over their election. They're not president, and we are. We'll leave our guy alone because Richard Nixon is A-OK with us. He's doing a great job. He's a good Christian man, and nothing's going to stop Richard Nixon from taking this country back the way it needs to go. Does any of that sound familiar? Because if you're saying that he changed the name of Nixon into Donald Trump in that statement, and you have almost word for word a verbatim statement that could be said in a news clip in your nightly news right now. The same was true with Richard Nixon at the start of the Watergate trial. Well, the trials that never came to be because, let's just face fact, once the president was impeached, he goes, I could lose my benefits. And he resigned, keeping his pension, his health care, and his Secret Service protection. I bet you didn't know that that's the real reason he resigned. Of course, he said in later statements and memoirs that he did it to save the American public millions of dollars that he knew the trial would cost, but let's just be honest. Lifelong pensions? All you got to do is quit? Yeah, I'd take that too. But Nixon was highly, highly popular at the beginning of the Watergate hearing. But what changed it? Because this is the strangest thing that you're going to learn right now. Okay, if you're a person that is into media and a person that is into more than one talk show host, one, how dare you? You should only love me and build up false idols in your closet to worship of me. But two, how many of us are actually talking about Watergate and this whole Trump-Russia investigation? Because back when Watergate's trials and hearings started, it was very, very unpopular to think that anything could affect President Nixon. But something happened. And it didn't happen within the houses of government. It didn't happen within any of the investigation wings. It didn't even happen in a police department or a parking garage or anything like that. Something happened that changed Watergate from something that Richard Nixon himself was using to prop up his public image of, I'm so strong, they're trying to tear me down. Does that sound familiar yet? The exact same thing that Donald Trump is doing. Well, something happened to take Richard Nixon from that to, I resign and I'm not a crook. And that thing was talking. Specifically talk from talk show hosts. One of the most influential ones, and if you ever get a chance to look this up, it's on services like PBS and Amazon apps and things like that. It's Dick Cavett's Watergate. Now, if you know anything about Dick Cavett, you're probably thinking, hey, wasn't that the guy that was CGI'd into the Forrest Gump movie? Yeah, yeah, but he was also a real guy who had a real talk show host back in the 1970s. And as such, he wouldn't let go of this whole Watergate thing. He kind of thought that it was a bad idea that the president could be given such unchecked powers to spy on his political enemies. So Dick Cavett started a series of his own show, little segments in the show, to talk about, to bring up the latest information about, to educate and disseminate information about Watergate. And he did this at the time that everybody thought Watergate was BS and that Richard Nixon was the greatest thing since sliced bread. Cavett persisted, and he kept persisting. And over the course of a summer, things started to change. The American public, thanks to guys like Dick Cavett, who then started inspiring other people, both in national and local media, to do this, conversations were started about, well, what is Watergate? What caused it? What was the president's role in it? Who are the people involved in it? Who are the cleaners? And once these questions started coming out, the newspapers picked them up. Well, the newspapers started going to different office buildings and things like that, and all of a sudden the headlines were reading, did Richard Nixon do something wrong? You see, this is the strangest thing I've ever had to say, but shows like this, that I know it must seem annoying to you sometimes, the amount of times that we've talked about Donald Trump's crimes, the amount of times that we've talked about political obstruction, the amount of times that we've talked about an impending impeachment, that it seems like, and I know, because I'm a listener of radio shows as well, it seems like the host is more begging for that to happen than they're actually trying to report on what it is and how it would impact things. So aside from doing a show all about that, which hopefully I'm not guilty of doing with this show, instead I would lay out where the battle really is. It's in public awareness. Remember, about half of us right now that depend on conservative media for all of our news, we don't even think that Trump is guilty of anything. No. He was exonerated, and our good friend William Barr, the Attorney General, told us so. But see, William Barr was also held in contempt for that little stunt and was also kind of being, publicly shamed, I guess is a good word, for his role of being a fixer for Donald Trump now that Michael Cohen is in jail. But of course, all of that side, they're relishing the fact that right now, everybody is too busy, too distracted. There's too many bright and shiny lights for us to focus on the thing that we should be focusing on. And back in Watergate, that was kind of what was happening. We were rebuilding the economy. We were, you know, amping up things between the United States and China. Oh my God, is this sounding familiar yet? And we had a president deeply embroiled in a scandal about his election. Now, when it came to their investigations, though, the House of that time basically said, oh my God, yes, let's issue the articles of impeachment. Now they're not doing that. Basically, either for a political reason or not. But at the end of the day, all of these senators and all of these representatives would react to the same one thing that all of them are beholden to, and that's me and you. the constituency of the United States, the electorate. We have an incredible opportunity right now to hold people's feet to the fire and make sure that accountability in the United States democracy is not something that we've seen the last generation of. And it's going to take guys like, okay, maybe I'm a little proud of this fact. Maybe I'm a little scared of this fact. It's going to take guys like me and guys like your Brad Freeman's, your David Pakman's. It's going to take your Arnie Arneson's. It's going to take everybody talking about this time and time again in excruciating details until everybody understands the depth and scope of it. Because if we don't do that, if we give up, then Watergate would have never happened. If Dick Cavett had given up his obsession with getting the story out there, he wasn't obsessed with getting even with Richard Nixon, and I know he wasn't really wanting to get even with Donald Trump because he wasn't renting low-income housing in New York at the time. That's what Donald Trump was doing during those years. But Dick Cavett did not have an obsession with getting even. He had an obsession with getting a story out. And that should be, for all intents and purposes, our raison d'etre that we do this show, that we do any of our shows from now until things change. Because the American public is woefully uninformed about what an impeachment is, how it works, why the president is deserving of an impeachment trial, and what that could possibly do in the long run for this country. And I know you're like, well, I don't want to talk about politics with my coworkers. I don't want to talk about politics with my family. No, we have to, because not enough of us understand what is going on. Take, for instance, my father, who does nothing but consume Republican GOP-centric conservative media. As such, he has no idea what is going on with Donald Trump. He thinks that Trump is innocent. He thinks that the Dems are just angry about the 2016 election. He thinks that there's a deep state conspiracy that was orchestrated by Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton. They don't have the real story. And until everybody has the real story, guys like us, we can't quit. Good luck, America. You're going to need it till the next show. Till then, love you, mean it. Gate in, bye.